plate a potential nugget.
So Jennifer, let's talk about the first transition. When do we know we're in that transition? You started talking about it, but I'm curious about what are the triggers to look out for when the first transition happens?
Yeah. So the triggers of the first transition are really the first tough choices we need to make as a couple. And we know when we're there, when for the first time in our relationship, we start to feel a bit anxious. So usually in that honeymoon period, everything's plain sailing and we sometimes can, and I know I did this as well, we naively look at other couples and think, oh, they're struggling, but we're so great. That's never going to happen to us. And this usually comes at the first point where we struggle as a couple. And that struggle is around, you know, how do we fit all of this together and make sure that both of us gets most of what we're aiming for. Now, of course, it's impossible that we both get everything we're aiming for, but that most of both of us feel we have a shot at some of those things that are important to us.
Got it. And you also talk about the notion of couple contracting.
Yeah.
It sounds quite formal and legal, but you make the case for having that kind of a conversation between spouses. I think as I reflect on my journey and some of the conversations I have with my friends and the leaders I work with, the challenge sometimes is creating that space for such a conversation. What's been your observation around how some people get around to doing this well?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think the thing which holds people back is, you know, I don't have time or this is going to take forever. And the way I think about it is not just one conversation. It's really about developing the habit of talking about these things. And what do I mean by these things? And as you said, although I call it contracting, I don't mean something you write in blood and sign your life away on. It's really about developing the habit of talking about three things. The first is what really matters to us. Now, this might be specific career goals we have. It might be a couple goal around financial stability, around living in a certain location. It might be a goal we have around carving time out for pursuits that we're really interested in. It's very important we understand what we're aiming for individually and as a couple and what our partners are aiming for. And the reason is right now, most people have a lot of opportunities and a lot of options. And the thing which tends to trip couples up most is they try to do too much. And oftentimes when they step back, some of the things they're doing are actually not that important to them. They're doing them because they feel they should or because everyone else is doing them. And so being very clear around what are our goals and what matters to us just makes that decision making a lot easier.
Is there an example or a story you could share?
Yeah.
When you say too much?
Yeah. So let's imagine the first transition comes at a time when you have children, which is when the potential for all the different things we could do, you know, often expands. How much time do we invest in career, etc.? Now, one of the conversations it's really important to have is what kind of family do we want to be? What matters most to us? Are we the family that wants to be really embedded in our nuclear families so that the cousins all grow up together? Are we the kind of family that wants to be an adventure family where we go on trips and really show different parts of the world to the kids? These are very different types of families, and they would make us choose to do different things because we all have finite time. And what can happen in those early years is that we can think, we're just going to do a bit of everything. And then, of course, everyone becomes frazzled. It negatively impacts on our careers. It negatively impacts on, you know, the emotional welfare of us and the children. But if we've been very clear around what is the kind of family we want to build, and therefore, what are the choices around holidays and weekends, and do they stack up with that vision we have for who we want to become as a family? You can think of that in terms of your career as well. What career goals do you both have? Is it about growth in terms of knowledge? Is it about rising up the hierarchy? Is it about having a career with a lot of geographical moves and seeing different pieces of the country? If we're very clear about that, when we're given career opportunities from our employers or if we're poached by, as you said, a poaching company like he used to work for, it becomes a lot easier to make those decisions mindfully rather than get attracted by a big salary rise or a prestigious title or something that looks high status, we can come back to the ground and say, okay, this opportunity looks wonderful. Does it align with what we want?
And it gives you criteria to evaluate opportunities.
And it's really important to have that up front and to have an ongoing conversation on that, because the number of times I would speak to people and they would say, you know, I woke up and I just felt like, how did I get here? And it's not that anything was bad per se, but this is not where I want to be in life. You know, this is, you know, I had all these different options and I've just sort of swum along with the tide and it's taken me somewhere that is not objectively bad, but it's just not what I want. So, so many people end up in that situation. And it's just because they've been drifting without really sitting down with their partners and thinking about, okay, what is it we want? Does this align? Yes, no. Do we take it? Yes, no.
Mm-hmm. So, and back to the conversations, I think you said three.
Yeah, so that's the first piece. The second piece is really related. It's what are the lines we're not going to cross? Now, this conversation is a little bit counterintuitive because in most of our countries, we think about choice being a good thing. The more choice we have, the better. But the research actually shows the exact opposite. The more choice we have, the harder it is to choose and the more likely we are to regret our choices. And so what helps couples is by saying, okay, if these are some lines we're not going to cross, and they might be geographical lines, what is a country or an area of the country we just wouldn't go to? It might be a timeline around how much work is too much work that's going to negatively impact us. It might be around travel. How much work travel do you have to do that is just really bad for the family and unacceptable? When we have those lines as a couple, what it does is, firstly, it makes decision-making a lot easier because if something's outside the lines, it's a no. But it also, if you like, defines the field we're going to play on. And it's like, this is the field we want to play on. And if an opportunity comes up that's within this field, then we talk about it and we consider and we think. But if an opportunity comes up in another field where we've said, for whatever reason that is for us, that's out of bounds, it's a lot easier to pass on. So maybe I can give you an example to demonstrate this. And I'm going to give you an example of a couple earlier stage in life. And they were actually one of my MBA students. And as you know, on an MBA program, there are good recruitment years and there are bad recruitment years. You know, there are some years where the job market's buoyant, there's lots of opportunities, and others where it's not so great. And this was one of those years where there were a lot of options around. And one of my students came to me and he looked really upset. And I said to him, what's wrong? And he said, I've just been offered the job of my dreams. And I said, you do not look like you've been offered the job of your dreams. You tell me more. And he said, you know, well, it was to open the office of a very prominent NGO in an African country. And I said, so why the long face? And he said, well, you know, I went home to discuss it with my wife and she said, we just cannot move there. And I said, okay, why did you apply for the job then? And he said, oh, well, we thought that because there were so many options, I said, just apply to everything that looked good, wait until the offers come in, and then we'd make the decision. But of course, we know very well in the job process that very few people are really enthusiastic about a job until they've gone through the recruitment process and got the offer. And at which point, not being able to take it is a huge disappointment. Whereas if up front they'd drawn those geographic boundaries and said, you know, for us, Africa is outside of those boundaries, he would never have applied to the job, no disappointment. And this happens time and time again in couples. You know, one will get a great opportunity, or in some cases even take the opportunity, and then we see those negative consequences down the line.
This situation is also a search consultant's nightmare, right?
Absolutely.
somebody says yes to the job and 1 week later says, no, actually, you know what? My wife can't move this, so yeah, I'm not going to take this up.
And as you know, this happens all the time. And of course, this creates huge conflict in couples. And the third area, and so again, this is really important to talk about and to revisit, because of course, the things we want and the boundaries in our late 20s are different in our late 40s. You know, this isn't something that sticks over time. And the final area to have an ongoing conversation about, and the area that I find is a little bit more difficult for couples, is what are some of the things that worry us? What are some of the things that scare us about the future? Whether it's about our careers, our relationship, the geography we live. And the reason these are very important is twofold. One is that very often we worry about things that are non-issues for our partners. So let me give you an example of a later couple. I was talking to a couple and they were having a lot of conflict around sort of what to do in the latter piece of their career. Their children had left home and they just really couldn't figure it out. And I always speak to couples separately. And I spoke to him and he said, look, the issue is I know she wants to move to where the grandchildren are. And I mean, I just don't want to do that, right? I want to have some time of freedom and I want to pursue our careers in the last thing. So he said, but I just can't talk about it with her because I know that's what she wants. I talked to her. It's not what she wants at all. It's not even on her mind. But this fear of his was creating this big issue, which was not actually a real issue. And this happens time and time again. We imagine something is going to happen, which is not even on the cards. So that's one reason it's important to talk about the things we're worried about. The second reason is, of course, some of those things may be potentials. And a good example here is for any of your listeners who are married to people whose family has a different culture from theirs. And I don't necessarily mean national culture, but just is a very different feel. And very often this can, those of us who are in those situations, this can cause conflict. You know, what do we do around the holidays? You know, one family has very different traditions from the other. And it's real, right? This is a real fear. But when we discuss these things as a couple, it's much easier for us to sensitively manage them. You know, if I know that you're worried about my parents taking over all the holiday festivities, it's much easier for me to really sensitively manage that boundary than if I think you're okay with it, in which case I won't do anything and it will become a big issue. So having those conversations, which can feel a little bit more difficult, actually long-term help couples to avoid some of the situations that can be very conflictual, both for our relationship, but also vis-a-vis our careers and locations and these kind of questions.
The one phenomenon that I see a lot of couples deal with, and I include my wife and I here, is that we often become victims to the frog in the boiling water syndrome. We just hurtle along in our professional journeys, while our personal context shifts significantly in terms of children coming into our lives, parents aging, and so on. It's worth checking if the choices we made to a certain profession are still valid given the evolving personal context. Choosing to stay in a certain profession, I feel, is as important as a choice as taking up a new job. But I notice that people often process the latter more explicitly than the former. I also like the notion of segment of one that came up in my conversation with Anu Madgaonkar, a partner at McKinsey Global Institute. She spoke about how she took stock of her journey when she had a child.
Well, I was fortunate in that a couple of things happened. I think one thing was that because I was in the consulting profession, paradoxically maybe to what people expect, it actually offers you a lot of flexibility options. Mm. It is more flexible than many other professions might be. Secondly, I think I was in an environment where they were keen to make this work for me, and therefore there were no boundary conditions or ground rules. I was told to craft whatever option worked for me. So I had a lot of choice and I could figure it out, right? Mm. So what were the options? There was clearly one path that said, well, I don't want to work full time. I do want to work part time. Mm-hmm. But the conventional model of part-time, which is I work 4 days, I take one day off in the week, that doesn't work because children don't follow, babies certainly don't follow that clock, right? So we worked out a much more flexible model in which I would broadly work 60% of my time, but have the ability to step back and do whatever I needed to at the times that more or less worked for me, provided you know it worked for the team also. There was a bit of give and take, but it wasn't very rigid, right? Mm. So I did that for some time. Then there came a time where I, you know, my husband was actually living in Hong Kong at the time, and I was in Bombay with my baby, and I wanted some time flexibility to be able to spend time in Hong Kong and then come back. So we crafted something where I would work on a client engagement for a short period, maybe 3 months, and then I would withdraw and, you know, take off and go to Hong Kong and spend, you know, 3 weeks there and then come back and then do something else.
Got it.
So we modularized it so that I could take breaks between the work that I did. And then there were many other options as well along the way. But the interesting thing is that now, you know, we've actually given lovely brand names and lots of, you know, formalization this, to all of the options.
These are packaged.
These are all packaged. They're a menu of things. But we still give people the message that if you want to craft something else, which is outside of this or a combination of these, feel free to do that. Because we think about every woman here as a segment of one, right? We are going to solve for you. So let's figure out what it will take to solve for you and make that flexibility happen.
I think the segment of one applies to men as much as women and to each couple. Recognizing the uniqueness of context, what we are solving for, and having an experimental mindset as we go through these transitions is likely to be key. Sometimes going with the flow and seeing how it plays out may not be a bad strategy. You might like the playlist Maternity Transition if this topic is of interest. Several women leaders speak about how they navigated this passage of play. Please go to the curated playlist section at playtopotential.com to know more. If you're deriving value from the podcast, please consider paying it forward to Antarang Foundation, an organization I work with closely. Antarang Foundation is a not-for-profit that works with thousands of young adults and helps them play to their potential. While the world of human potential, I believe, is uniformly distributed, I feel the world of opportunities, unfortunately, quite uneven. We may not realize it or want to acknowledge it, but the reality is that a lot of us are beneficiaries of the ovarian lottery, a term that Warren Buffett uses to describe the situation. And this sets us up very differently. To know more about how you can make a difference, do visit the Pay It Forward section at playtopotential.com.